Welcome back to another episode of Real Ballers Read. We are so excited to welcome Reggie Bailey onto the show. This is the man behind at Reggie Reads on Instagram, the co-host of Books Are Pop Culture, the podcast. This is a real gift to have you here with us, Reggie. Thanks for being here today.
Jenny Miles, is my gift, my pleasure to be here. It's an honor. You two are doing great work. I just listened to your episode, at least as of this recording, on Eric Thomas. I watched your episodes on Native Son and on Relationships Being Everything.
Hey, first views. First views, yeah, on YouTube. Yeah, appreciate you.
YouTube on YouTube. You're recording in person. You're doing good work. You're doing the work, right? So you two should be celebrated. You two should feel good about the work that you're doing, and you two should obviously keep going. Y'all talked about persistence before. Y'all gave a nice anecdote that people can learn from about, you know, your pursuit of having Jacqueline Woodson on your show, right? And, you know, that is something that you two should remember whenever the times are down or, you know, whatever the case may be. Just, yo, we kept going. We ended up getting Jacqueline Woodson. We can keep going and we can get whatever else we want to do. Right. So
absolutely.
Y'all are doing the work. I have on your merch.
Yep. Yeah, we merch. Sure will. There it is.
I'm enjoying it. I see you have on, I guess, new merch, yeah. Jen. Yeah, so yeah. I probably end up getting that too. And yeah, I'm glad to be here, man. And you two should be proud of the work you're doing.
Appreciate you, Reggie. Appreciate you. Yeah. So you are bringing forward a really interesting book, Literature and the New Culture Wars. We're really excited to get into it. But before we do, could you just share more of your story as a reader, as a literary critic, and as a co-host of a podcast as well? Like, just please share your journey here with books.
So basically, when I'm young, right, I read like some accelerated reader stuff. I don't know if by the time y'all was in, if y'all don't mind me asking this, what year were both y'all born in?
96
and 98. So 98. We did have accelerated reading, though. We were kids in like the thousands, so I think that was still around.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool. So y'all are, I'm technically like a 90s baby with y'all, because I'm born in January of 90, right? So.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah. So when I'm coming up, you got accelerated reader and all that shit. So I did some reading, but it was mainly like, okay, we got to do it, and we got to take this test by this day. It wasn't necessarily like. Most of the time wasn't necessarily picking out books that I wanted per se, although I did enjoy them. I usually passed the AR test because I enjoyed the book, right? You know, the books that probably resonated me the most when I was a kid was definitely Slam by Walter D. Myers, right? Because, you know, dude played basketball.
Yep.
He had a nice little girl he was into. You know, I related to him. He was from the hood, though. I wasn't, so I couldn't necessarily relate there, but nonetheless, everything else besides where we lived, we shared the same interest, right?
Yeah.
So accelerated reader was a thing, and then eventually my reading life, and I start to tell this story and include this because for the longest I dismissed it, and I think that it was it's unfair to do it. I was reading Archie comics and stuff like that. I was reading ESPN articles all the time. I was reading XXL, eventually I was reading Slam. And the reason why I say it's important that I do mention that as reading, because it is reading. It might not be Toni Morrison. It might not be Ann Petrie. It might not be Ellison, right? Edward P. Jones, but it is reading. I was reading a ton of Scoop Jackson and Elliot Wilson, right? And I read a lot of it, so I'm not going to erase it. Like, I read a lot of Slam magazines. I got the cover with Iverson with the fro. You know, I got J-Kid on the cover with the Nets, right? I got LeBron on the cover in St. Vincent, St. Mary's, man. Like, I'm not dismissing that no more. Like, that stuff is worth something now, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Put them in shoeboxes at the crib.
Right.
Right? So, you know, I was doing all that reading. There's actually, I don't know if I ever talked about this on air, so you got to come to Real Ballers Read to hear this. There's actually a blog that me and my brother did the summer of my freshman year. It might still be up there. I don't know. I might have deleted it. But it was like the Bailey Brothers blog or something like that. And we was talking about sports. We was just sharing our opinions because that was, you know, this is sad news. My apologies. But we did that the summer Steve McNair died. I never forget when Steve McNair died because that was crazy as hell to me, the whole situation. And Steve McNair at the time was one of the few black quarterbacks in the NFL. So we were doing a blog the summer of 2009, right? And that was also when the Nuggets, they had Melo, they had Kenyon Martin, and obviously Kobe's still alive, but that in 09 is the Lakers' first championship where Kobe was the main dude.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, they repeat in 2010 against the Celtics, but they end up beating the Magic the summer we were blogging. Right. So we both had our blog and then we both had individual ones too. Is it up? Are you looking at it?
No, I was just getting chills because I remember watching that Lakers Magic series and thinking like where I was and you're over here writing a blog somewhere.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, man. Like, I'm not going to lie. Shout out to a dude who said this because he was right. But it was he wasn't supportive, but he was right, though. He said, man, your blog was some boring summer shit because I was at Dell State at the time. And he was right because I ain't doing it no more. And I kind of hate that he was right. But what I do love is now, like, I'm back in the world of, like, books and not necessarily writing per se, but I'm in the world of, like, covering something, doing something creative on my own again, right? Because one could say pods are audio blogs. I mean, if you want to be tricky with your words and the way you categorize things, you could say I'm blogging again. But yeah, that I think that's important when it comes to my reading journey. And then I didn't blog or anything like that for a while. I was still reading articles on ESPN. I always have, always will. You know, now there's other places like The Ringer and stuff like that too. Well, no, I'm lying. I don't read as many articles on ESPN anymore, but I do watch it all the time on YouTube, like the clips and stuff.
Right.
So I'll always have ESPN in my life is what I should say. And ultimately, although that's not reading, that is me still taking in their journalism. Right. And I take in The Ringer's journalism as well as like House of Highlights Through the Wire and stuff like that. I'm all on like the NBA. But anyway, I'm in grad school when I'm 24. Right. I graduated college in 2013. I took a year off, started grad school the fall of 2014. And that's when I ended up meeting this professor. His name escapes me now. And I hate that. But nonetheless, it's this white dude. And he ends up like getting me, if you will, the first night I was in class because he's like, listen, y'all, you know, I'm gonna end it a little early. I forget the other team, but I know one of the teams that was playing was the Ravens, and it was a Thursday night. He said, look, it's Thursday night football. I'm trying to catch this Ravens game. So we're going to end it a little bit early tonight.
Let's go.
Right? So I was like, okay, he knows all this shit, and he's into sports. So I got to step my game up because I felt like I was a one-trick pony. He was talking basketball, politics, business, marketing, you name it. Everything he was talking about it. So throughout college and all the way up to 2015, no, from my sophomore year of college, I ended up staying in college 5 years too. Ain't no shame in my game. I was a super senior and shit. But I ended up staying in college too. 5 years. So my second year, I end up getting a job at Foot Locker. And by the time I graduate, I end up becoming a store manager at Foot Action because it's all the same. Right? By the time I graduate, like literally the week I graduate, I become a store manager. I get keys to the store. And then I worked there for like just a year, right? That was like my thing. I was just working. Then I ended up doing grad school. And that's when I started reading in 2015. 2014 is when I like kind of the conversation with myself, like, okay, I got to get in the books. 2015 is when I actually did it. And when I did it, I was reading self-help primarily. I read a couple business marketing books. I read a couple of like books on science and technology. So like I read the biography of Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson. That shit fire too. I can't hold you.
That's I still have to read it.
I read The Innovators by Walter Isaacson. I read a book called Zero to One by Peter Thiel. I read Think and Grow Rich, How to Win Friends, Influence People. I read that introvert book called Quiet. I know y'all probably know Susan Cain.
Yeah.
I'm like a walking self-help manual in 2015, right? I even read a book called The Personal MBA while I was in graduate school to get my MBA.
Let's go.
Right? So 2016 is when I pick up Baldwin. I pick up the fire, the two books responsible for me being the reader that I am today. Without them, I do not get to where I am today, is The Fire Next Time and Between the World and Me. I read the both of them, and then that's when, for the next basically 3 years, I read nothing but Black authors. I had to double-check my Goodreads to make sure it was 3 years, but at worst, it was like 2.5. All Black authors, right? I think it might have been 2.5 because I think I read The Sympathizer in 2018, and that ended my streak, if you will. All Black authors besides one book called Black Against Empire, where it's Joshua Bloom and another gentleman's name, but it was a white man and a Black author that wrote it. But every book I wrote was by a Black author, or read was by a Black author. And that's how I developed my Black canon, right? So now, you know, a lot of people with their frame of reference, when you read authors and stuff, especially old school authors like Baldwin and Wright, Ellison, you know, they're referencing Dostoevsky. They're referencing Fitzgerald. They're referencing Hemingway, maybe Edith Wharton or Virginia Woolf or somebody like that, right? My frame of reference is Morrison, Wright, Ellison, you know, just in case someone's listening for the first time and they don't know who I'm talking about. Toni Morrison, Richard Wright, Ralph Ellison, Ann Petrie, Edward P. Jones, right? Those are my frames of reference. My frame of reference are Black people. So I changed the game by doing that. And as an adult, right? As an adult, I built a Black literary canon that I read and that now I cite. So, you know, if I want to cite a sentence or if I want to cite a topic, I'd be like, yeah, Petrie wrote about this in The Narrows. What? Petrie, The Narrows? What's that? Ann Petrie. You don't know Ann Petrie? Right? And then I get to treat them like how, you know, you don't know Ernest Hemingway? No, but I know Ann Petrie. Right? So change the game. Flip it. Right? And I treat these authors with as much respect and dignity as they treat theirs. Right? So if I recite a random line to you from literature, it's going to be a random line more than likely from the Black foundation that I built. Alice Walker. Chinua Achebe, right? Danzy Senna. I mean, I could keep going. Y'all want me to? Or I could keep going, right?
Yeah, do it.
Like, I mean, I won't, but you know, like, seriously, yeah. The list goes on and I love it.
Yeah,
it's the best thing ever. Jamel Brinkley, Nafisa Thompson Spires. Come on, y'all, right? But what happens is, and this is what kind of leads me to this book I asked y'all to like read with me, right? Initially, when you first get into books, and especially when you get into bookish communities, which for me was Bookstagram, you end up just engaging with folk. And you end up seeing people who have been doing the work longer than you have. And as a result of that, and I'll speak to me and just how I approached it, I thought they're doing it better than me. But more importantly than them doing it better than me, they're doing it correctly. Right? And that was flawed thinking because we're all doing it correctly or some version of correct. Right? All of the ways we, not even all, most of us are doing this thing. I don't even know if it's most. A lot of us are doing this thing correctly. Right? A lot of us are approaching books with integrity, with open-mindedness, if that's a word. Yeah. We're approaching books prepared to engage with complexity and nuance. A lot of us are. But I had to get there because for a while I was too impressionable. For a while I was a part of the mob. And this ain't no rightish. This ain't no right wing shit. I ain't Tucker Carlson. I ain't, you know, I ain't none of them niggas and over Shapiro. There at Fox News, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, I was a part of the mob that is like mob mentality. And, you know, a lot of times mob mentality is assigned to like leftist people, but the mob is also on the right.
100%.
Right? Because the mob will tell you, you can't read the Bluest Eye because some real shit happens in there that, you know, is just too real. Just like the mob will also say, yo, Mark Twain was wilding in the 1800s with his liberal use of nigger. Because I think people need to, you know, I'm not white and I didn't write a book about literature and the culture wars, right? So I can say nigger, right? And if it's jarring when you hear it here, then imagine reading a white man saying that in the 1800s, right? But my thing is, we should be prepared to deal with that, because real life don't give a damn about what we prepare for. And yeah. And now there's this phrase, it's five words. I think it's five. Y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, that I live by when it comes to literature. Challenge me, don't coddle me. For a while, I wanted to be coddled. But my reading life is more fulfilling because now I want to be challenged. And if I'm not challenged, I'm offended.
Wow. What does it take?
Not offended, but it sounded good when I said that, though. Yeah.
Right.
But what I prefer to be challenged.
Right. What does it take for a book to really challenge you now? Like this late in the game, you're such a, you know, developed reader now.
I mean, you know, that's a good question, and my answer might disappoint. I mean, I'm not like no hard ass. The funny thing about it is, like, I'm an easy grader. Like, I grade with a curve, you could say, even, right? I appreciate just someone willing to commit the time it takes to put together, even if it's a 100-page book. I haven't wrote one page of a book. So how am I going to hit a nigga that wrote 100? Right? But so if I finish a book, like, let's use Goodreads as an example, right? If I finish a book, I'm giving it 3 stars off top. Because I finished it. Yeah. I must have liked it enough if I finished it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, dead ass. Like, there's only one book I gave less than 1 star to. And that was Kane. Or less than 3 stars to, and that was Kane. I gave Kane 2.
By Gene Toomer?
Kane by Gene Toomer, yes.
Why is that?
Because I don't think Kane's a good book. Right? But a lot of people think Kane's a good book. And here's the thing. I'm actually glad we talked about this. And Kane is like, that's like a running joke in BAPC land, right? We always clowning Kane because we chose it for a book of the month in April, I think, of 2021. Right? So I'm like, yo, man, listen, I've heard things, seen things, gone through things. Like, life ain't all peaceful, you know? So, I expect the best of the best and the worst of the worst when I read, right? But I think it's a little unfair for people who are already underpaid and is documented to add that to the list. Like, hey, look, y'all got to be our, like, rating system, like, when we put the book out. The publishers know exactly what's in the book, right? They know who it's suited for or whatever. And like I said, maybe there's a way to create more jobs and just create that little literary ratings agency. And in that way, you know, they can say, hey, look, this book is rated R. So, you know, if you don't want your child reading a rated R book, then, you know, fuck it.
Right. And that might be because the publishers aren't in the business, though, of making sure the books are read. They're making sure the books are sold. We are helping these books that are being sold be read by talking about them, by having.
And we both, like, didn't have a good experience with it. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I gave it 2 is because I literally had to finish. I could not finish it because I just asked people to read it with us for the book of the month. Right? What type of shit would that be? Like, yo, I ain't gonna lie, y'all, I couldn't finish this shit. Right? But the thing is, here's the thing that I said in my review, or at least that I consistently tell people, read it for yourself. The thing that I think is like the worst thing ever is if I say something unfavorable about a book and someone says, oh man, I was gonna read that. What you mean you was gonna read it? You still need to read it. You might love it. And that's the thing that I regret from like my past life as a part of the mob, if you will, is someone would say, yo, this book is offensive. I didn't like it, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know what? If this person is offended, I can't read it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this, and this might be a bar, this might not. I have a right to be offended just like everybody else. And you're not going to be offended for me.
Yeah, I think Deborah Appleman, though, breaks down all these different ways that folks have been offended by books, reasons why they ban them and cancel them, take them out of the curriculums. And for you, do you think that there is ever any good reason to not but put a book in front of a child? Like, what is your line personally?
I don't know if I have a line, and I'm not even going to sit here and act like I can get back completely into the mind I had when I was, you know, what, 7, 8, 9, or
right,
you know, even 15, 16. You know, like I expect to like encounter things that disturb me in my books. I remember I was doing an IG live one time. And it was with Artorias Renee Augustine, right? Shout out to them. And it was for the Inky Bulb, which was with Lamp Black Lit, right? And when speaking with Artorias, right, they were like, you know, I go to books for comfort. And I told them I go to books to be disturbed. I'm not looking, like I said, challenge me, don't coddle me. I don't want my books to hug me. I don't want my books to, I'll just take it. I don't want my books to make love to me, bro. Like, I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for like, yo, you got me thinking different about something now. Or, yo, this protagonist was really in like a sticky situation. Like one book that me and my girlfriend Kathia always talk about is Kindred by Octavia Butler. Because Dana is in like the most unbelievable of circumstances. And the thing that I don't like about like a lot of critics now, and Appleman gets to this, is the whole thing where like, yo, if I was in the 80s, I'd be thinking just like how I think right now. You put me in the 80s, I see all this foul shit going on, I'd be the activist. I'd be leading y'all to the righteous highway or just to righteousness. No, you would not. You would be complicit just like you complicit now. Real talk. Real talk. Even the people who are the most righteous are complicit. You in the US, ain't it? You that's tweeting nice. From an iPhone, right? What went into making your iPhone? You know?
A lot of slave labor.
You know? A lot of
destroying ecosystems.
Do people wear Nikes?
Buying materials.
I know time. I wear Nike socks and Nikes.
Yeah.
And we all heard of the Nike sweatshops. And even the shirts on our back. Where were they made? What the working conditions like where they were made? Right? And I got a Real Boss Reed shirt, so I ain't trying to like come at y'all or nothing. But still, where was the shirt made, right? Actually. Right? That's my thing. That's why when I thought about it, I was like, I'm trying to act like I care about stuff sometimes that I really don't give a fuck about. And I find power in being honest about what I care about and what I don't. And people try to make you feel bad because you say you don't care or this doesn't move you. And it's like, so what? They're not living your life. And the truth of the matter, too, is a lot of this internet stuff that they was talking about, even in literature in the new culture wars, it ain't real. Like, because here's the thing that I know, because I'm born in 1990. If people all of a sudden decide, yo, man, Reg put out a review of a book and I disagree with what he said, right? And for some reason they flooded my mentions, I can delete the app. Let's start there. I can delete the app from my phone because my account will still be there when I reinstall it. Right? So now I don't get any notifications and now I'm at peace. Or I could not delete the app, cut off the notifications, and still be at peace. Like, I would still be here with Kathia and my two cats, Sebastian and Penny, and I would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, people, and some people will say I'm not as empathetic as I should be to, like, younger folk who have had social media in their life, their entire life, right? But I can't fake the empathy. I'm not there yet. Because what I really feel is, you can log off of the app. That's what I really believe. When I get there to the part where I'm like, yo, man, I really understand, I really get it, then I'll act like it. But until then, I can't. And that's the thing, right? Now, when people take a strong, honest stance like that, that can be problematic.
Yeah.
Versus me saying, look, I understand, I hear the other side, but I just don't relate. Why can't I say that?
Mm.
You know, and I feel like sometimes that is, sometimes simple disagreements like that turn into like something more than what it is. Because I just, like, literally, and y'all tell me if I'm wrong, is that not something that we could just disagree on and, like, kind of work out? Or nice. Is that, or am I, like, wilding right now?
I totally agree. So many opinions on the internet. And it's funny, though, because a space like Twitter, you could argue, just kind of mirrored or copied academic circles for years, you know, petty political squabbles over opinions, right?
We can't both be right.
I was reading the book and really thinking, like, what is under that fear, though, of, like, being judged? Like, what is really there in our age where folks judge so harshly? You know, I think we would all say there's some insecurity that propels that. But, Jen, I heard you off there.
Oh, no, I was just saying that there's a real, like, zero-sum game of, like, if I'm right and I know I'm right, then that means that you must be wrong necessarily. And then, of course, that plays out in this book on Twitter. I think we generally, people, at least in terms of the ways that we've been, like, schooled, is definitely towards being very uncomfortable holding two opposing ideas, at least two opposing ideas at once. And that's where I thought it was interesting where she talked about Appleman in the book talked about, like, how cancel culture and all of this that's happening in the new culture wars is kind of creating propaganda for books. And I was like, you know, like, that's a great point. But, like, when was it ever not that, right? Because, you know, in a way, like, teachers, for as long, let's say in the last 100 years, can always decide to grade their students off of how well they, like, wrote their essays towards what the teacher already believed. You know, like, I think there is a much larger issue here around, like, adult tendency to have only one right answer and then enforce it. Whereas kids and most people in general kind of live in a world that's much more uncertain, much more, like, gray and hazy. But yeah, that's just kind of what I was riffing on.
Man, the world is gray, right?
Yeah.
And literature is gray, just like the world.
Absolutely.
That's why it's, like, probably my favorite, like, topic, if you will, now, right? Like, I really like what you said, Jen, because that's even something I'm not thinking about. Maybe because I'm not a teacher, right? I'm not thinking about, because with Appleman, right? Appleman, at least from the work that we received, because I haven't met her personally. I'm assuming that you gentlemen haven't either, right? So
no,
the work can say whatever it says, right? And from the work, we learn that she views herself as a liberal feminist, right? So, and we learn from the work that she appreciates the diversity of thought. She appreciates the fact that the class isn't on the same page about the book. She appreciates open, honest dialogue and the exchange of ideas between her students, right? If the work is a reflection of her, indeed, that is dope. That's what all teachers need to be doing. And it just so happens, though, this is more so a book about, I guess, the engagement of the work. It is also about the teaching of the work, for sure, right? But I guess it's speaking to, like, the teachers who are already on, like, the right side, for the most part, I feel like. Because mm-hmm. this is a solutions-oriented text as well, which I really like. It's not just criticism the entire time. It's like solutions too. I like solutions. With nonfiction, right? In terms of, we were talking earlier about how I grade books, right? I grade nonfiction favorably when they provide solutions. Even if I don't agree with them, yeah. I like the audacity of providing a solution, because if you, lack of a better term, and maybe perhaps to be a little provocative, if you complain the whole time and you criticize the whole time, and at the end, all I'm doing is complaining and criticizing, I feel a little like what? So I kind of already agreed with this before I read it. What are we going to do, though? Right. Even if it's wrong, because here's the thing. And I also say this too, I have the right to be wrong. And I'm not invested in being right. Because I'm not a fan of, like, the one right answer, but I'm the fan of, hey, you and I both said different things, but we're both right. Because a lot of times that's why it's gray. Right? It's gray because there might be 70 wrong answers and there also might be 70 right answers. This is complicated. This ain't easy.
Yes. Yeah, no, but I mean, the notion of a right to be wrong, though, I think is so powerful. But I'm thinking now that, like, really does vary on the occupation. You know, doctors don't really have the right to be wrong. I'm trying to think of who else. Okay. Writers, yeah, right. Writers, like, should have more bandwidth. Oh, I guess within writers, though, like, a journalist versus a novelist, again, has a much different right to be wrong there. So, but I think that's a really powerful thing that must be stated. Mm-hmm.
I guess we need to embrace our right to be wrong, because, as stated in the book, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not going verbatim here, it's like, there's this constant thing where it's, even those who do right are, like, scared and nervous to be wrong. It's like, yo, I've been doing the righteous thing for 15 years and they'll get me the fuck out of here if I make one mistake.
Yep.
That was honest, right? And the thing is, right, and I have grace for people who kind of, I guess, do a lot of things publicly and just share a lot of work publicly with people, because it's like, you're just not going to be right all the time. You're not going to get it right all the time. It's just like shout out to, like, LeBron James, for example, right? Because this man's been in the spotlight since he was, like, in high school, like, not even as a senior, just in high school, right? And what's the biggest scandal to his name? The decision, right? Like, you've been a mega star, and your biggest scandal is the decision. Which was you basically broadcasting the fact that, you know, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. Like, think about that. Think about being as good as LeBron is for as long as he's been, and that being the only controversy that you have.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazing, right? And that's not to say he hasn't slipped up. I mean, even, you know, recently some people might. There's a certain quote-unquote endorsement that he put out recently that probably rubbed people the wrong way, right? But even still, that didn't get as much flack as the decision did. People was outside burning his jersey.
Going he was crazy. The most hated man
riding.
I know.
We were in Ohio when that happened.
See what I'm saying? Y'all probably went out there and burned a jersey. It's like, nah.
Nah.
Y'all like, yeah, but I ain't gonna tell them.
Imagine just the implications, though. It's just like, this black man wanted to switch jobs. Ah, I hate him. He worked for us. He's working for the other master now. Damn it. It's like,
but that's real talk, though.
It is, yeah.
Like, yeah. Like how dare you? how dare you leave Cleveland, Ohio for Miami, Florida?
Yep,
right.
How dare you go team up with Dwayne Wade? Only, you know, the third, you know, most people say that only the third best shooting guard of all time. How dare you, LeBron? You know, yeah. And it's just like, I use him to say the same thing just about these writers and stuff. Cause like, you gotta think, man, like some writers like work for a place or they got a blog or whatever. And, you know, we doing all this shit talking about grind culture now and all that. And it's just, I just go back and forth on like, we not gonna stop grinding though.
Yep.
Maybe that's a topic for another show or something, but it's like, we ain't about to stop grinding. Why are we critiquing this shit? What are we doing? We distracting ourselves from the work that you know you're gonna be doing anyway. But yeah. Anyway,
how do you think Bookstagram has kind of addressed some of these political issues in the years that you've been on it? Like, we're still relatively new, and I don't think we've seen a lot of conflict. But I was thinking like a scandal like the Sherman Alexi or the American Dirt, you know, novel that she talks about. Where, you know, the white woman talks in the perspective of a migrant Mexican, I think, worker. How has that been addressed on the platform?
I mean, you know, Bookstagram is just like the rest of the web.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I
really? I think it definitely seems warmer right than Twitter, though. It definitely seems a lot.
It's warmer than Twitter, yeah, but it's still warm. Like, or what is it? It's still hot.
It's still hot.
Yeah. Like what? Twitter's on, you know, what, 105 degrees, then Bookstagram's maybe on like 90.
Yeah.
It's still hot outside.
Yeah.
You still sweating.
Definitely sweating.
You know what I'm saying? So like for example,
mm-hmm.
and this is covered in the book too. American Dirt, man, and yo, love to my Latinx Bookstagrammers. Like y'all are ill, y'all are dope, y'all are doing great work, and I'm inspired by several of you for real, right? Their effort to cancel American Dirt was some of the best promo I've ever seen for a book. And I'll say that again. A lot of the, and not even just Latinx people, because it was allies and all that, right? So I ain't trying to single them out. But the efforts that a lot of members in Bookstagram put towards canceling American Dirt was some of the best promo that I've ever seen for a book. Because the thing that people do not understand about like canceling and accountability or whatever you want to call it, right? All y'all doing is giving these people free promo. The way to cancel something is to not talk about it. Like before I hit y'all, I'll just say this on air. You know, you can edit it or whatever. The other book that I thought about doing with y'all was Stateway's Garden by Jasmine Drain. Had both of y'all heard of Stateway's Garden before I mentioned it to y'all?
Nope.
Exactly. That's how you cancel a book.
Was it canceled? Tried to be canceled? Oh, no. Okay, good.
It's still out, but I'm saying
yeah.
The way you cancel something is to make sure no one knows about it.
Yeah.
Like, y'all spreading the word, yo, like, this book is offensive, and y'all got this campaign where everybody's posting. It was like these blue things, and they were saying, and look, the campaign was righteous because it was saying, yo, instead of reading Janine, read, you know, like Naima Coaster, right? Like, if it came out today, I got this book, Naruto on the Park, behind me, right? Read Clavis Natera, right? Because she's Dominican, right? They were just basically shouting out authors who are Latinx, right? So you might hear like Luis Alberto, you know, Urrea. You might have heard Angie Cruz. You know, it was a long list of people. Sandra Cisneros, right? But ultimately, right? American Dirt was chosen by Oprah, right? And, you know, people still read it. And the thing about Bookstagram and the thing about even probably Book Twitter and all that, we are a part of, like, we're not the majority. Like a lot of people who read books and stuff, they're not necessarily on Bookstagram. I know several people who they talk books just like how we do. They engage with books just like how we do. But if you go on their socials, it's just them and their family or them and their work, right? As in, like, their job. You know, it's just them and their interests. Hey, I was watching, you know, Dahmer, or I was watching Atlanta or whatever, right? You wouldn't know that they read books because they got a timeline of people that ain't in the books. And they don't know about Bookstagram. And they don't know about Book Twitter. So, like, we're not reflective of, like, the reading world. And you can also just look at, like, just the fact that most people probably don't care. Like, we're the anomaly, right? The fact that we read into, like, who authors are before we read the book. Most people don't give a damn about that shit. They want to read the book. They just want the story. They don't want the personal life. And that's the thing that I consider, too, right? Like, I know I'm flawed. I'm contradictory. I'm complex. So there's a certain R&B artist from Chicago that I will not listen to. And y'all know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
But definitely. I am more than likely going to read To Kill a Mockingbird, though, although it's a white savior narrative, right? I'm more than likely, I have read Juno Diaz. I have read Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, right?
Right.
I probably will read somebody like Sherman Alexie.
Yeah.
You know? If you want to call me a bad person for that, that's fine. But I don't care.
Right. That's exactly what I was going to ask you about, though, because why is it that we draw that line differently with music? It just feels like I couldn't say, if I was a burgeoning singer, oh man, I'm really trying to listen to how R. Kelly sings and how he's connected to his generation prior of R&B singers and how he ushered in the newer one. Like, it still feels like he is canceled through and through, right? And to, in my opinion, in a justified way, right? But with books, there's such a gift in the words that we feel like more ownership of them, or like feel more need to keep them because of their effort, right? And it seems like that argument could be made for Robert Kelly's music too. But, you know, I'm not going to make it, but I'm just curious how you think that line is drawn there.
That's valid. What you said is valid. Like, people put a lot of time and effort into their craft and the arts in general, right? But my thing is, this is the reason why, like, we just got to be more thoughtful when we're being critical, because, like, I'm flawed too, right? I just, like, I'm keeping it real. You ain't never gonna find no R. Kelly shit about me. You know, you ain't gonna find none of these wild shit that some of these niggas doing about me. Because I just don't move that way, right?
Right?
But at the same token, I just know that, like, You know, I'm not perfect, and I have made mistakes, and I will make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's life. I'm just Jan and Miles. Let me tell y'all something, right? You know, I don't know if y'all ever heard this before, but y'all are gonna make mistakes, and guess what? When you make them, that doesn't define like who you are as a person.
Mm.
You know, and it's so interesting, right? So many people like Bryan Stevenson. And they like his work, Just Mercy. They love Bryan Stevenson. Bryan Stevenson approval rating is through the roof. They love him.
Near perfect.
Right? Yeah. What does he say that so many people look over, though? Everyone is better than their worst mistake.
Yep.
Nobody want to hear that shit, though. But they love Bryan Stevenson. And even that is a contradiction in and of itself. Love him, believe in his work. I believe what he says, except that. I don't know. And look, mm-hmm. Here's the thing, too. I'm not saying this to say, like, I dislike the person who says, I'm not going to read J.K. Rowling. Chances are, I probably love the person who says, I'm not going to read J.K. Rowling. But my thing is, I can also love the person who says they will. And I think we so many people listen to like drill, right?
Right.
Like I said, we keeping it real today. They on drill music. They are talking and bragging about, I'm not generalizing drill. Some drill music has rappers literally naming dead people and dissing them and saying they are smoking them. Hey, look, but we turn it on, we getting sturdy, right? We having a blast while they rapping on dead teenagers' names sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? But we want to come and be all righteous in bookland.
Mm.
This big boy talk, man. This big boy seriously, talk here today.
Seriously.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Real Bars Read with Reggie Bailey. You can follow him on Instagram at Reggie Reads and check out his podcast, Books Are Pop Culture, on Instagram, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can find them. Because we love talking with him so much, we actually split this episode into parts because it would be too long as a single episode. So be sure to catch episode 2. And as always, leave a review of the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Thank you, and we'll catch you over there in episode 2.